And I really believe that everybody has a greatness inside of them. And choosing the winning side, coping, being honest with yourself, how do you get out of a situation you don't want to be in? That's the way you get to that, the goat within, the greatness inside of you. And it applies to everything. Of course, I apply it to longevity and fitness practices and all that wellness and platform stuff that we all either engage in or some of us don't, but it really applies to everything. And the more and more I grow in my business and expand really globally at this point, meeting great people, training with them, writing programs for them, it really illuminates very brightly to me that we're all connected.
Yes.
We really are. Friend, enemy, foe. Everyone's really connected. And there's great power once you understand that connectivity issue. And you can only fight so long against everything around you. And again, that's a choice, right?
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Easy Conversations podcast, a podcast about having easy conversations. I'm your host, Furkan Dandia. This week's episode, I sit down with Tim Ward to explore one of the most powerful ideas we can embody in life, which is the gift of choice. Tim shares his deeply personal journey from experiencing severe physical abuse as a child to becoming a leader in fitness, longevity, and human performance. What emerges in our conversation is not just a story of resilience, but a framework for transformation rooted in mindset, discipline, and purpose. We also explore the difference between living as a victim versus a survivor, how adversity can become a catalyst for growth, and why true strength is built through both physical and psychological development. Tim also shares insights on mentorship, fatherhood, and the importance of surrounding yourself with the right people. Ultimately, this episode is a reminder that while we don't control what happens to us, we always have a choice in how we respond. Tim Ward is a health and longevity coach and author of The GOAT Within. He helps individuals build strength, improve performance, and extend their health span through practical, science-based strategies focused on muscle, nutrition, and lifestyle. Check out all the ways you can find Tim online, including his link in the show note captions, fitnessquadrant.net. And before we jump into the episode, here's a quick reminder that listening to this episode does not establish a therapeutic relationship. The purpose of this episode is educational and information based and has no affiliation with my therapeutic work. If you require therapy, please seek out a licensed professional. Now let's just jump right into the episode. Tim, welcome to Easy Conversations. How have you been?
Excellent, excellent. Great to be here. I've been good. I've been a little chilly this December and January, but even more reason to hang out in the gym and work out.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's good. Well, and I think that's part of your story, right? So I like the fact that when we chatted, one of the things that stood out to me was your view on collecting everyone's stories, right? And then finding that sense of commonality. I touch on it quite a bit in this show and my podcast here around how stories are so powerful. Not only are they engaging, but there's something we can take out of someone else's experience. And there's some that survive and others that don't. I actually wrote an essay on my Substack about recently about being a victim or a survivor. And the point I was trying to get across was when we feel like the victim, yes, that may serve a temporary instant gratification, but in the long run, it's not enabling or facilitating our growth. And that's why some stories have stood the test of time, because the figures in the story were not victims. They were survivors. You don't hear a lot about victims. You don't necessarily celebrate those stories. So what are your thoughts on stories and why do they stand out for you?
I know, just well said in your opening monologue there regarding what I call in my book I call The Gift of Choice.
Mm.
And I talk about what that really means, drilling down to having choices. And to your point, a victim, that story gets old. And we all have our sad story. We all have our victim stories. It's the ones that can cope with the reality of whatever happened that made you a victim.
Mm.
And know how to understand it, extract something from it, and cut the ball and chain off your leg, because you're never going to grow if you keep that, as you said so brilliantly. You're never gonna be able to grow if you're holding on to that victimhood.
Mm.
And it could really be anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
It could be several different things, and we all go through it. It's what makes us all very common in a mm-hmm. lot of ways. We mm-hmm. all have our ups and downs. We all have our moments of joy and tragedy and all that sort of stuff. But I think that's what life is. And you have to have that mentality of winning. You've got to mm-hmm. have it. That's really where I came up with the name of my book after several renditions of, what am I going to call this book? What is, mm-hmm. what's it about? Blah, 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 all that stuff. And I really believe that everybody has a greatness inside of them, and choosing the winning side, coping, being honest with yourself. How do you get out of a situation you don't want to be in? That's the way you get to that, the goat within, the greatness mm-hmm. inside of you. And it applies to everything. Of course, I apply it to longevity and fitness practices and mm-hmm. all that wellness platform stuff that we all either engage in or some of us don't, but it really applies to everything. And the more and more I grow in my business and expand really globally at this point, meeting great people, training with them, writing mm-hmm. programs for them, it really illuminates very brightly to me that we're all connected.
Yes.
We really are. Friend, enemy, foe. Everyone's really connected, and there's great power once you understand that connectivity issue. And you can only fight so long against mm-hmm. everything around you. And again, that's a choice, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things I've taken out from just personal experience too, and when you talk about choice, I think the choice to continue to move forward, as much as you may feel like something's happening to you and you may feel like the victim as we're talking about it, when you have the gift of time and you're able to look at it more from an objective standpoint over a longer period of time, as much as sometimes those situations can be hard, they're actually a gift, as you were talking about, because if you didn't go through those hardships, you wouldn't be where you are today. And there's a lot in your personal story as well when it comes to hardships. Mm-hmm. Are you able to share the journey you've been on to the extent you feel comfortable sharing, but it would be worth understanding mm-hmm. where you see that gift of choice and how you've been able to find that greatness mm-hmm. within?
Yeah, I guess a quick snapshot to where I am right now, being an expert in longevity and fitness and a thought leader in the application of exercise physiology, what it means to us today. The way I ended up here, if I scoot back years and years, decades at this point, to when I was young, I know what pain is as a young kid, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8 years old, into my early teens, with a pretty severe physical abuse growing up. In and out of the hospitals, and it was not fun, especially being that young, getting hit and beat up constantly. My whole family was, from my father. That stuff it still sticks with me today, but it sticks to me in a good way, if you can even understand or make sense of what that really means. You don't know where to go when you're that young. You don't know why it's happening. All you know is, man, is that painful. Even at a young age, I knew deep down, through the tears and just the straight out fear of growing up in a household like that. And some people have it a lot worse than what I had it. I'm not mm-hmm. using it as a crutch at all, but I knew deep down, during the beatings and the black eyes and the bloody lips and all that stuff, I knew I was going to have a find a way out, a door out of that, and call it hope, call it whatever you want to call it. But I knew deep down in time, I'm going to find a way out of this, and I'm going to capitalize on it. And to zoom ahead quickly again, to describe what I mean by capitalize on it, is I have two boys. They're in their mid 20s now, but I have never hit them. I have embraced them. They're my best friends at this point in my life, which is what I wanted. I show them lots and lots of love, something I never got. And So I think in a strange way, my abuse when I was young hurt so much, and seeing my mom get beat up and all that sort of stuff, I think it really came through, and you never know it at the time how it's going to come through. It could come through horribly. You could end up being that, again, a gift of choice, right?
Yes.
Or it could really show its bright light in my situation where I had two boys, and I knew right away when they were born, anybody that's had a kid, you're never really ready for it.
Yeah.
But when it happens, it's like just this innate thing inside of you. You're like, here we go. That's mine. No return policy. There's no user's manual.
No.
And I knew, and it was weird because I never really calculated it into my equation. I knew when my first kid, Maxwell, was born, this thing came over me in the hospital. Wow, here's a turning point for me. Here's a massive healing platform for me that I didn't even realize was going to happen. That this little 7-pound baby that just came into the world, this is my gift from God to be able to treat him the way I wanted to be treated when I was little. And that was a big change point for me, not even realizing it. But looking back at it now, I think it was a massive blessing and opportunity for me to really overcome what I had to go through when I was young. Yeah, my brothers got beat up, and it was messy. It was messy. I don't shy away from it. It's the truth. You can't hide or erase it. So I'd rather be a little bit authentic about it. And yeah, yes. We all go through times. Everybody listening, we all have those times. You can feel like a hero one week, and then something happens out of the blue, and you just feel low. And so trying to stay in the middle and cope, I think that's the choice I'm talking about. That whole thing really led to me being young and physically beat up. Really, I never wanted to be home. Imagine that as a 6 or 7-year-old. I was good at sports, and that was my happy place. Youth athletics, basketball, baseball, football, tennis, all that, and I was good at it. So the cheers and the accolades when I was really young, it felt like heaven to me. Because the other side of it was getting beat up and getting smacked over the head and all of those things, right? So athletics became my happy place. And I stayed there 364 days a year. And that really was a savior of mine. Because without it, I really don't know what I would have become or done. And of course, going through the channels of youth sports into your teen years, I had some scholarships for basketball out of high school, and that led me into the whole fitness platform, because you had to be bigger, stronger, faster if you wanted to compete at those higher levels. So that's really what kicked off my entire fitness journey. It's probably in my teens, like we all at the high school gym doing everything incorrectly. My shoulder hurts, my back hurts. Well, work through the pain, that whole mentality from years ago. That led me into getting a little bit more inquisitive about exercise sciences. And I didn't even call it that back then. It was just working out, fitness, working out. It was very unsophisticated back in the 70s and 80s. I'm 61 now. And man, has it changed. There's a lot of new technology, a lot of new studies. And I was able to link up with a real exercise scientist, a master's degree, back when I was in my probably mid-20s. At a plateau in my training, I couldn't understand why I couldn't get stronger, or at that age, pack on a little more muscle, right? That whole youth thing, that's what most guys want.
Yeah.
And some women want that too. This guy told me once in the gym, I'm working up dedicated. I have this very curious part of my persona. I want to know how things work. It's just how I am. Some people don't care about that. So I want to know what the chemistry is. It just, for some reason, I dive deep into topics, and I really like to understand them. So I naturally surround myself by people that are a lot smarter than I am on specific topics. And I'm like an octopus around them, just questions and how this and how that. It fascinates me. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened with exercise sciences. And I did classwork, and I've got a bunch of different certifications. Those are mostly window dressing compared to the people I work with, the PhDs and the scientists, for years, Olympic level caliber PhDs, that once I saw a glimpse of that entire exercise science world, I couldn't even speak. I was so fascinated. And that really hit switches in me, like, all right, I need to really know this stuff. And it's going to take me a long time, but it's still today, after perfecting systems and I've got trademarks and my book's a bestseller, all that sort of stuff, I'm still inquisitive. How can I get better? What's the latest research? Whys and hows and all that stuff. So I never stop. And I think that's one of the reasons why I've grown, really, at this point, a global clientele, that I write their whole ecosystems for them, training and longevity. And it's mostly people from 40 to 70 years old I work with, because it's such a big issue with people. They don't know what to do. They shouldn't have to suffer through aging into decline. And you won't age into decline if you get the right knowledge. Not to sound arrogant, but a guy like me knows how to write those protocols. And so they're not only achievable, but they're sustainable for people. And so anyway, it's a kind of a big picture of my journey and all along the way.
Well,
you can tell it's how we started the show. Choices. It's all stacked on stories and choices, every single one of us. So fascinating.
And to focus on the choices piece, we all tend to, in some aspects of our lives, most of us will encounter monsters or darkness in our life. And to your point earlier, we can choose to become the dark as well, or become like the monsters we face, or we can choose light. And in what I'm hearing from you is you chose light. What critical points along the way did you notice those choices, and knowing that, okay, I can go down this path because of what happened to me, or I can go down this path and create a different meaning for my life and the children I will have?
Whew, that's a big question. Thinking back, just real personal, crazy stories about, I remember one of those moments that you're asking about is my older brother. This is probably, I was probably in my late teens, maybe 19-ish, 20-ish, in that age group. I'm going to live forever age group.
Yeah.
I know everything.
Yeah.
I remember he was big time into motorcycles, just obsessed with them and racing them and that whole young thing of speed and let's make it loud and fast and all that. So he would go up to this local drag race track for these open grudge nights on Wednesday night. You could bring anything. You could bring a skateboard or you could bring a drag car. It didn't matter, right? People would pay a fee, line up, and see how fast they could get down the quarter mile track. So he would go up there and he'd say, yeah, you got to come, you know, watch. And I'd say, okay. And I was fascinated by it, but not anywhere near as into it as he was. And he said, you want to try? And, okay, big brother, sure. I don't want to let you down, that type of thing. So I'm on his bike learning how to ride it, and the thing was very fast. And I decided to push it, feeling a little like, all right, I could do this. And I had so much power, this thing. I was on the street. I wasn't even on this track. And this is a pivotal moment for me. Gassing this thing way over the speed limit. Of course, these things are rockets, right? And so I'm turning a little long turn, going way too fast. I don't even want to admit it, even now. And laying on the gas, right, going faster and faster. Little did I know, I was doing 80 miles an hour around a long turn, and I'm gassing this thing, and I'm leaning into the turn, turning the handlebars just a little bit to the left. The bike's not turning. And I'm sitting there in my mind doing 80, 90 miles an hour. Why isn't it turning? It's because the engine was so strong, it was lifting the front wheel off the ground. All right. And it was probably only a couple inches. It wasn't real high. And as soon as I let off the gas a little bit, the handlebars were still turned a little. Comes down on the pavement, and the whole bike shook, and I almost went flying off the bike at 80 miles an hour. And to say I was scared is an understatement.
Mm-hmm.
So that moment is one of those personal stories of being stupid at a young age. And that moment changed me because I started asking myself, what if that was the wheel was turned a little bit more and I went flying into that oak tree? What would have that meant to my mom or my brothers? Mm-hmm. And that really changed me at a young age. It scared me enough that I said to myself, I don't ever want to be out of that much out of control again, or that stupid to think I can push something that hard. And for what? For what? So I'm sure we all have our stories when we were younger, but that one sticks with me. I've actually told my kids that story, saying, listen, you guys are going to be faced with stuff all the way from your first beer to your first joint. It's younger and younger now, especially with all the social media and kids in third and fourth grade have $2,000 iPhones. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And I could constantly tell them all the teams I coach, the youth sports, I would get them together after every practice, after every game, and I would have that 5-minute talk about choices. I'm like, guys, you're going to be faced with a lot of stuff, peer pressure. You think it's cool. And the parents would always thank me. And to this day, I haven't coached youth teams in quite a while. And I coached a lot of, probably about 15 years, basketball, baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents always used to come up to me at the end, such a sincere look to them saying, thank you so much for talking to these kids after every practice about that. Because these kids hear from their parents, yeah, mom and dad, you're just like we did. Okay. But if you have a coach or an outside mentor that might mean a little bit more to you as a young kid, it hits a little differently, I think.
Yeah.
So I made a point to always do that. And I think that was part of my love for coaching and connecting in trying to perhaps bend the ways of young kids knowing what they're going to be facing. And I felt like I was always doing my role outside of the sports that I was coaching. These kids, they're getting fed a lot of garbage on these phones.
Mm-hmm.
Let me try to be a little bit of a voice of reason to them and get them to think about things maybe a little bit more in detail so they won't have that first beer when they're 11 years old or 12 years old, or they'll make a better decision if they feel that in their gut. What am I doing? Bobby wants me to jump. I don't know if I should do it. Boom. Make the decision not to. So I still, what's cool about all this is these kids I coached in there, elementary, junior, high school, my sons have such a strong bond to their local friends that they grew up with. Mm-hmm. And I coached a lot of them. And a lot of them went on to play Division III or Division II basketball or football, baseball. Mm-hmm. And every year, December 22nd, we've made it a tradition. We didn't even really plan it, but we have a Christmas Eve party. And my house is not a huge house. It's just over 2,000 square feet. And it has become from 6 to 8 of their friends 20 years ago to you can't even fit another body in my house. There's 50, 60 people. The parents are coming. But my point is there's about 15 of them that I used to coach. And now they're 25, 26. And guess what they say? They come through the door. They're yelling. We won so many championships with these kids. They all, Coach Ward, how you doing? And we still talk about all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it had to have been some of those roots that I want to say I planted with them, but we really all planted them together. And now it's bearing fruit at my age, 61. These kids are 26-ish. And we have the greatest time. We always talk about old championship games we won and all that sort of stuff. So those are some personal stories that are cool and dear to my heart, is to be able to stay connected with all those kids, watch them grow up and turn into young men and women. And talking about the good old days to these young kids is really cool stuff. It's fun for me and my family and my wife and all that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think you're touching on something profound here. It's such a beautiful gift to be able to influence someone's life in a way or play a part in it. And I feel now, and maybe I'm mistaken, but at least my experience has been that we're not emphasizing mentorship as much, especially amongst the youth and boys, for that matter. And I remember for myself too, my late 20s, early 30s, I didn't do a good job of seeking it out myself, but I also didn't have people around me who could mentor me, and I felt lost at times. And then after going through some difficult experiences, I decided to make that a priority and sought out mentors that I stay in touch with on a regular basis. And there's something about just age and experience that we don't necessarily, we take for granted, but we don't necessarily put a lot of importance on that wisdom that guys like you have shared with the kids you've coached. And I think it's so important. And a lot of men I don't see are prioritizing that if I make certain choices, I'm not only doing it for myself, but I'm also doing it for people that may come after me and I can support them. Was that something at the forefront for you, or it was just a organic thing that happened? And do you see similar challenges in society today?
Yeah, I think it was more of my personality when I think back to it.
Yeah.
To really want to give these teams and these hundreds of kids I coached, give them something more than sports drills and the philosophy of the game and all that stuff, that whatever sport I was coaching. I always felt like the team aspect and in everything we were doing on the field or on a court, that was just part of the equation. And in order to be a more effective coach for these kids, I always felt that personal connection, talking a little bit more about life issues at the end, just to easy, not really parenting them. You don't want to cross that line too much, but giving them some advice. I think at the time I didn't really realize that stuff that was coming out of me doing that. But at my age now, with all the clients I have in my fitness training stuff that I do, my average client's probably around 50, I'd say, in that range, maybe 55. It's funny because I get into now talking to you about this stuff, Furkan, it's the same type of conversations I have with all my clients now, that we talk about issues while we're training. We're digging into the workouts, believe me, but a lot of these people have been with me for such a long time because the results they drive and so on, programs that we do and I write for them. We get into these big discussions of worldly issues. So yes, I do think that it's missing in society. I think that society really, it grows in all sorts of ways, some good ways, some great ways, some not so good, and some really bad ways. And I think, you know, part of what drives some of the not so good ways in life is really built around being, you know, overly selfish, being too driven to want things, the things that don't matter, the fancy cars and the fancy everything, clothes and all that. Who doesn't like a nice vacation? I'm not saying I don't, but to put them on your focal point as a priority, I think can sometimes lead the masses astray as to what's important. Our egos oftentimes get in the way. Why would I want advice from that person? I'm better than he or she. Probably not in everything. Everybody has their gifts and everybody has their specialties. And I think if you can maintain that open door in your head, maybe I should listen to them, even though I disagree, or maybe there is something they can offer that I'm not doing and could really help. And then maybe I can reciprocate with something. So I think mentorship comes in many different forms. For example, what I mean by that is I've been a dad for 26 years, always giving the advice, always answering the questions. And my two boys, they're actually mentoring me in certain things now. We have a relationship where I don't mind if they see something. They're young. They're young and they're so much smarter than I am when I was their age, especially. So they give me advice. I always tell them it's all how you deliver that advice. It can be in a mean way or it could be in a really nice, collaborative way. So just be careful how you're serving up what you're selling or what you're trying to talk about. And fortunately, they're very cool about it. Hey, Dad, you ever think about doing it like this? That's the way I like to get approached. I had it the opposite when I was there. It was getting rammed down my throat. So that's what I do with people. When my coaching, I'm like, listen, why don't you think about it this way and be a little bit mindful of maybe these three things. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the reasons I've been successful is because I can relate to people enough where they're open and it's a great give and take. And I pride myself on that. People, you see it in professional sports, right? Just because you were a great athlete, an all-star athlete, right? MVP, basketball, it doesn't mean you're a great coach. It's happened time and time again. So I think coaching, having that ability, and I'm not just talking about sports, I'm talking about everything, right?
Yeah.
I think it really has some different layers to it. And I think people can be a natural coach. They can learn it. But I think if you're a natural coach and you seek more learning from mentors and really plug into that whole thing, I think you can become real effective communicator and you can get people to really buy into what you're trying to do. And if you do that in a team dynamic and all of a sudden you got 15, you know, men or women all on the same page, that's what makes championship teams, man.
Yeah.
You get them all on that same wavelength, that same rhythm. And that's where you see lesser talented teams that are together and synchronized. You see them beating other teams that should blow them off the field or the court because they're all individual, right? These other teams. And I read a lot of books. I'm a huge reader. That's how I unplug at night and sciencey stuff. But then I read a lot of, I don't know if any of your listeners ever heard of Don Winslow or Jack Carr. Oh, man. Unbelievable books. Espionage, secret operation, all that sort of stuff. Navy SEALs and all these special forces teams. And the one thing that the writers were in the special forces. So it's Jack Carr, especially, he's incredible. Yeah. So one thing he always talks about in his books during the novel is about how synchronized these teams are. And they just the way they look at each other is sending messages, right? And that's the ability to really coach and line up and become a force as a group. I just went off. Sorry about that.
No, that's okay. There's something you touched on that I think is worth bringing back. You talked about how you have that openness and humility that you can also take feedback from your own sons. And you also talked about the escape you found in your youth, especially around getting accolades and getting that, I guess, almost approval from people.
Yes.
How did you stay grounded at that time of your life? And how has it served you now that you're still open to receiving that feedback, even though it's coming from your own children?
Great question. There's probably multiple answers to it. I think I had some stumbling blocks when I was younger, going off into the wrong territory. And I quickly realigned back to, man, I got to fly right here. I can't, if I want to be what I know I want to be up in my head someday, a leader, somebody that can inspire people, I have to find a way to have that honest stability in my life with myself. And that meant you got to listen to people that went before you. You got to listen to a better way. And it doesn't necessarily mean somebody older than you. So my firstborn is humble to a point of almost too humble. And that's the way I raise my boys. I'm like, don't be that loudmouth. Sit back, observe, listen, be a graceful person. Don't pretend to be the smartest guy in the room because you never will be. And my oldest son is a physics major at BU, Boston University. It blew the cover off that school. It just excelled with the highest grades and super smart. But he's also a kid that he'll sit down on a piano for 6 hours, never had played before, and he'll figure out how to play chords, and he'll walk. And in 5 hours, he's playing music. Same with the guitar, same with whatever he wants to do. And I'm like, oh, man, I'm feeling a little inadequate here as a dad. So he really is somebody that at 26 years old has that old soul in him. He's got that those old eyeballs in a way that he's extremely reasonable, very practical. So he's helped me in a few things of maybe doing something differently. When I'll ask him why, and he's always has a very logical answer. I've opened up to the idea of my young boys. Jesse is my other boy. He's 23. But they grew up in a world that I didn't grow up in, with way more technology, faster learning, different ways to learn. And so I have to really take where they came from, way more advanced than I was with computers and technology. They walk through programming. It would take me months to do what they do in 10 minutes. And it just comes so natural to them, right? So I really, in today's day and age today, and all the technology, how it drives how we work, what you and I are doing right now, we weren't doing this 12 years ago. There's no way we could have, right? So this stuff really is silent and it creeps up on us, right? So I think having the ability to look at something that somebody else is suggesting, there may be a better way, I'm all ears. I'm all ears for it. And so they both give me those moments. Part of the ball and chain on my leg that I carried for years, Furcum, was I had fought jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai and all that stuff growing up. Very aggressive. I was very competitive on a court or a field. You wanted me on your team if you were playing, because I would go to the nth degree to get a ball or win a game or whatever. I'd find a way. So my training in some martial arts, I was pretty good at it. I wasn't, there were people that were certainly far better than I was, more skilled, but I had some anger issues, and that's what I would turn to, sparring and then fighting and jiu-jitsu especially, because it's so physical.
Yeah.
You can get good training partners. You can really rock and roll, and people don't realize 30 minutes on a mat, how exhausting that can be. So that really let me get a lot of my aggression out. But my kids would tell me, this is even 10 years ago, Dad, you're too hard on people. You're too hard on people. And I would be, what are you talking about? And blah, blah. And they really softened me up a little over the years. And I look back and I'm like, you know what? You're right. I was too opinionated on things that I shouldn't even have been opinionated on. Too aggressive in the way I would. So those issues, they really helped me with that. And my wife used to tell me too, but she's my wife. Oh, okay. Yeah, you don't get it. I'm a guy. When my kids start saying, Dad, you're too hard. And said, you know what? They're right. They're right. I got to lighten up a little bit here, man. Yeah. I could be dead tomorrow. At my age now, I feel like my life has, even at this age, I feel like parts of my life are just beginning, man. I feel like I'm flourishing in different ways. And I think it's because, back to how we started, choosing things like listening to my kids about being too, that was a choice I had to make. Do I stay critical and too hard? Or do I say, you know what? I'm going to lighten up a little bit. Let the grass grow around me a little bit instead of always cutting it down.
Yes.
So I really have changed that way. And I'm a practicing Christian. I got baptized 5 years ago. That was a major change in my life. My hard ways, some things were working out and I was good at some things, but I never was completely satisfied. And I was like, man, my way isn't working you know, how I want it to work. And I made some decisions. I'm a huge fan of sports, and I try to not think about the economic stuff that goes on in sports, because I think it's disgusting. People making 50 and 80 million a year, and then another 200 million a year on sponsorships, collegiate athletes. I just don't agree with it. Sports is such a pure thing that I just wish it would stay pure, but it hasn't. It's turned into show business. But aside from that, there's some really great athletes that I watch. Multiple really good athletes that I look up to for their athletic prowess. NBA guys, NFL football guys, MLB baseball, some of the bigger sports. I watched them for years, and before they would do an interview or they'd win a championship, they would always say, I just want to give all my glory to God. And I'm here for a reason and blah, blah, blah. And we wouldn't push anything down anybody's throat, but they would always say that. And one athlete in particular, for the Boston Celtics, Al Horford, great NBA player, man. I always looked at him. I'm like, that dude is so happy, and he's always so calm. And people in the NBA love him in the locker room because he's a leader, and people, coaches go to him, players. And he's a practicing Christian. And I always looked at him, and I'm like, man, what am I missing? There's a bunch of other players that, you know, are like that as well, and not all in basketball. And I'm like, man, I'm missing something. Mm-hmm. So I go to a local church, and I'm good friends with a pastor who used to be a Penn State running back, actually. He's from New York City, just a great guy, athlete. I work out with him every now and then. And he was hardcore athlete, and then he had some things happen to him in his life years ago, and he became a pastor and a PhD theologist. And since I'm very good friends with him, and I talked to him one day, and he said, too many people don't understand how good the message is in Christianity. And he said, it's simple. It's all about love. It's all about being graceful. It's all about having a priority to not prioritize everything in our lives that get pushed at us every day. The Hollywood this and the race cars and the Ferraris and the big house. And I said, you know what? He's right. People that really focus on those things as that's my goal and money. I want to make another 10 million bucks. Those are empty things. Who doesn't love money? We're all, of course, right? We want to do as well as we can and all that stuff, but we shouldn't be prioritizing it as a number one, this is all I care about, when at all odds, it doesn't matter if you're a little illegal about it. I'm gonna take the legs out from this company and that guy, and I'm going to win no matter what. And so there's a better way. So anyways, that was a big change in my life. I got baptized, and I really started to understand more of what that really means. And it's calmed me down so much in my life. I feel like I have a rule book. I feel like I have a different purpose. And I think that's one of the reasons for me that my training business and my coaching has expanded way beyond just private training and all that sort of stuff. I have other things I do as well, investment-wise and business-wise. But this is my love. This is my passion. This is my full-time thing. And it's really, I think it's resonated through my brand into society a little bit. People that listen to me, or people that work with me, or if I give a speech. That's one of the things I'm starting to do in 26. I'm getting hired to speak, and I have a 50-minute speech that I give about the roots of performance and longevity. And I tie corporate performance and individual performance back into being healthy and strong instead of aging into sickness and decay. And it's resonating. I'm getting pounded with people emailing me. They want me to speak to this small group and this one and all that stuff. So it's part of, I believe, being open a little bit more to the universe, to some criticism. Maybe there's a better way for my kids. Dad, you shouldn't be so hard in choosing. Hey, I want to really have a bigger voice in society. It doesn't have to be the U.S. It can be anywhere. I just did a great show. Last week, I did a great show from Dubai, that big show. And I did another one in Australia last week as well. And I'm just getting emails, just great comments from people. And I've opened myself up to the universe a little bit, sharing some things that I do. And it feels great to have people connect. That's a big change for me, talking about a couple pivotal moments in my life, right? We're only here for a short time, man. And you got to be authentic. You got to be honest. You got to really resonate with people. And you got to help people.
Yeah,
we all need help.
Yes.
None of us are perfect, man. We may be good in a few things, but life isn't made out of a few things. It's multiple things, right? So yeah. Those are some of my personal stories, man.
No, I appreciate that. I think faith has been huge for me as well, and has served a significant transformation. It just allows me to look at things differently, especially when you're struggling at times. It can just give you that wider lens on things for sure. Now, we've talked about choices, humility, we've talked about perspective. How do you tie that together, and how do you find that greatness within you, as you started it off and alluding to your book as well? How does one find that greatness within oneself? Because it's unique and different for everyone. And I think sometimes we get lost in comparison that, oh, that person is doing that and I need to do that. But I find at times we need to look at it as ourselves as unique, and we have unique gifts. And sometimes we avoid looking at it because we want to be someone, we want to have someone else's gift.
No, it's such a great point. I make a point when I start working with a husband and wife, or which I do quite a bit of actually, or just an individual. And one of the initial things I talk to them about, don't go chasing somebody else's physique. Don't go aspiring to be that muscular guy or that slender in shape. Yeah, we know you want to get there, but don't try to copy them. You may be better. You may end up having a better physique or being more healthy, right? So What I tell people is this. I tell a little story, and the story goes like this. Companies like Google and Apple and Tesla and all these major companies, right, talk about their brand and developing their brand. And they spend hundreds of millions of dollars developing the brand. Amazon, right? Whole Foods, you know, what you hear those words, what do you think of? And I tell people, I said, listen, you may work for a company and you're part of those teams that you have to stay on the corporate point. And this is our ethos and our ecosystem. We build on it. It's always about the brand, making the brand. I tell people, guess what? You are a brand unto yourself. Why are you spending all this time worried about all these other brands? What's your brand? What's your personal brand? Because you are the greatest asset you'll ever have. And the world is going to look at you that way. Are you a liability to the world or are you an asset? So what do you want to become for a personal brand? And I then say to them, listen, we've all had the flu. We've all had a severe cold, right? Headache, stuffed up. We're awful when we're sick, right? We can't perform. We can't do anything. So the opposite of that is being extremely strong and healthy. So there are mechanisms in place where I believe it's the roots of all high operating people that they are healthy and strong. They're not sick and weak because you cannot run at an optimal level, right? And we all know this, right? Saying things that we all know. So I tie this stuff into living a lifestyle that triggers healthy and strong. You start thinking about aging, you're naturally going to start to fall apart as you age. And there has to be strategies in place for you that you practice that are pressing back on that stuff. Add in the toxic world we live in, mass-produced foods and fake sugars and trans fats and seed oils, everything that literally takes our body and rips it apart into pieces, especially over decades, right? And I write about this in my book. It's the first 80 pages of my book is the toxic world we live in. I don't care how good your workouts are. I don't care how strong you are. I don't care how much in your brain you have a desire to be strong and healthy. If you have a toxic environment, meaning food and things in your household, plastics, and I cover all this stuff in the book, you are literally, you're never going to be able to run on all cylinders in your life. You just can't. And this is part of what I speak to people about when I give speeches, right? You're your own brand. Don't you want a strong brand? The more healthy you are, the more aware you are, and it's all knowledge, right? And then putting that knowledge into practice, you are a stronger brand. You can cope with things easier, things with more clarity. You sleep better at night. You're more energized, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And people start looking at you like, wow, that guy's always on point. That girl, that woman, she's sharp. She's nice. It's because they become healthy and strong as we age, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. Aging and decay really start to press down on us, right? Especially after decades of toxic food, sodas and sugars. And I'm telling you, if you look at the U.S., most wealthy country in the world, et cetera, right? It is the sickest country in the world. It is so bad. Right? We are falling into decay at a rapid pace, the U.S. It's because of all the garbage foods and the processed foods, and everybody wants the quick thing. And again, I dive into this in my book. And if anybody is inclined, go to Amazon and buy The Goat Within, because there's a lot of information in my book that just may trigger you to think about things a little differently, just on that part of it, the toxic environment we live in, right? So that's the first thing we got to get rid of. We got to understand what is toxic. How do I design my life to get out of that toxicity, right?
And from I would this, just add, like, on top of the food, I think people need to look at what they're consuming beyond just food when it comes to toxicity, right? Ideas, what you're listening to, what you're watching, right?
100%.
I'm with. So toxicity goes beyond food, I think. And that's something I realized too, is even the people I'm spending time with or what I'm listening to in terms of ideas or songs or music or
yes,
being in media, that all takes away from our ability to perform as well.
100%. I actually have a little piece in my book, and I think it's near, I can't remember exactly where now. The name of the chapter is Get a Posse. Mm. And I talk about the people you hang out with. Would they rather be sitting at the bar smoking cigarettes and other substances?
Mm-hmm.
Or are they somebody that really has a propensity? They want to get healthy and strong. They'd rather go to a gym. They'd rather eat good food. They'd rather learn more. So I tell people in the book, start hanging out with the right people. To your point, Furcum, it's not just the food, right? It's exactly what your brain is digesting.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff, it can be highly impactful. And this fits into the bigger narrative that healthy and strong is a combination of things. It's not just eating good. It's not just doing cardio work. Mm-hmm. It's not just lifting weights. It's everything done the right way in combination. And that's essentially what my company does for people.
Mm-hmm.
We put together those ecosystems. So eliminating toxic nutrition, right, is step number one. The other four steps in between, the last step, there's six total, is what I have a trademark called the fitness quadrant. Mm-hmm. This fitness quadrant is four things. It sits in the middle of my longevity matrix, which is six things. There's one on the top and one on the bottom. The fitness quadrant sits in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's four quadrants, the big four pieces of healthy and strong. It's resistance training, the top left. Mm-hmm. The top right is nutrition. The bottom left quadrant is cardiovascular. The bottom right is rest and recovery.
Mm-hmm.
That fitness quadrant is really essential. But before we dive into that, we got to, number one at the top, get rid of toxic nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
Practice the fitness quadrant. And then at the bottom, number six, the final piece, is something we're doing now that I just want to talk to you quickly about and your listeners. We have the most unbelievable new platform that we've developed. And we hooked up with a medical group out of Arizona. And we now produce targeted, customized supplements for our clients.
Mm.
And I've been doing a lot of research on the supplement world as a whole. You go to Amazon, you go to wherever you go, Walgreens. I'm telling you, it is really subpar.
Yeah.
The supplements you buy, you think you're buying good magnesium. You think you're buying a good multivitamin. Oh, man. We're producing an ebook right now on the research. It'll probably be out within a week on my website. Mm. And it's about 35 pages. I don't know if people have seen the news, or it came out maybe about a week or so ago, that one of the big brands is said to be in big trouble because it's a very high-end vitamin and mineral company. At least a third of their supply comes from the black market in China into their own warehouse. They say they don't even realize they're shipping out all these supplements that are very expensive, and they have heavy metals in them, toxins, and everybody buys them on Amazon, right?
Mm.
So we've dived into the whole supplement world, which is in the billions.
Mm.
People try to take supplements to fill in gaps, or they'll read something, oh, I should have more magnesium, or I don't have enough of this or that. And they don't really know how much they need or if they even need it.
Mm.
And then when they do buy it, it's some real low-level supplement, right? We have a program now that everything is made in Arizona in our manufacturing plant. We actually do lab work on everybody that comes on board now. This lab work is 120 biomarkers. It's 10 minutes at LabCorp.
Mm-hmm.
Your blood sample, we analyze it. We give you a dashboard, a private dashboard, shows you your deficiencies in your blood mm-hmm. panel. This blood panel typically is about $1,500 for private clinics.
Mm-hmm.
We have it for $349 for people in the U.S., okay? This blood marker, we now take it, and we see all your top 12 deficiencies. We actually make whole food supplements to now fill in the gaps, the true gaps of what you're really missing. $149 a month is the cost of having your own private supplements made according to your blood panel.
Mm.
It's a game changer. There's about 40 people that now I have on this. I'm on it myself. My sleep has improved dramatically.
Mm.
Okay. I don't know about you, but sometimes I overthink things.
Yeah.
So I'm 1 a.m, I'm thinking about something. I get up, I can't get back to sleep, but my sleep, I am crashed now. And this stuff is becoming front and center because you're no longer guessing anymore. And mm-hmm. you're no longer buying supplements that you have no idea where the raw ingredients come from. These are all made. We have no middlemen, no distribution. It comes right from the factory, right to people. So this guy that I work with for 22 years, all he did was pro athletes. 200 NBA guys and about 200 NFL for professional tennis players. 22 years, did their blood work every three months, and he made supplements for them because they're obviously high performers. Now they heard me, they got in touch with me, and they're piloting a program. They want to bring this program to the masses. So I am so thankful that I now have the program in my coffers that I work with people. It's all on my website. People can go and see the lab works underneath products. And it's so cool, this whole system that they have. So now you're really getting the stuff your body really is deficient in. And it's a funny, quick story. I'll just say it quickly. Also in my book, I had about a four-year stint in my life, Furcum, that I was so interested in food production, really interested to a point where I started meeting up with soil agronomists, people that managed crops and managed food production and all this stuff, right? So I took it to the nth degree, and I actually learned how to manage soil bacteria, soil fungus, soil structure. And I actually started building my own soil. I was so into it. I traveled the world from I was in Thailand, I was in Mexico, California, Venezuela on crops that we would do soil testing, send it to a lab in Ohio, one of the largest soil testing labs in the world. Shout out to Susan, called Logan Labs. People can go check it out. They massive company, great company. We would test the soil, see all the deficiencies in the soil, and then we would send the agronomist in to fill up the gaps in the soil, bumper crops every single time we did it, right? The food production on the crops would be incredible. So I have some experience in analytics. Really, the program that we have in place now for analyzing people's blood work, game changer for people. And it really is something that's making a massive difference for people. So I'm so psyched about it, because just the few dozen people that we have on it now are just going, oh my goodness, I don't even have to think anymore. They're taking what they need, right? They're losing fat quicker. They're recovering quicker after their workouts, all because we analyzed what they don't have in their system. So if anybody wants to check that out, I really would encourage them. It is such a fantastic program.
Sure. How can they check that out if they're interested, or even learn more about your book?
We're on Amazon. That's where everybody around the world's buying the book. We're on Barnes & Noble and I think Walmart and all the other channels as well. But Amazon's really the king to go on there. And we have an ebook on there and a soft cover and a hard cover. But it's $17-$18. It's the best $17-$18 you'll ever spend on the book if you're interested in really understanding a little bit of the science and the application of it to your workouts in the background. It's called The Goat Within. You'll see it's a bestseller there. My website you can go to. You can click a link through my website and get the book. You can also, on my website, we have links that you can go check out the blood lab works, the program that we do. It's very simple. And the whole thing is under the product section on the navigation bar. And I think there's some buttons right when you go on the thing. It'll say nutrient lab work. Click on there. It shows the whole program, how it works. I would really encourage people to at least go learn about it. And if the spirit moves you, go get your blood done. It's going to be so eye-opening for you. And simple system. Highly effective. It's all targeted to your personal blood panel deficiencies. And it is a stop guessing and start to do what pro athletes do. These guys are going for multi-million dollar contracts. They have to be at peak performance. So this is a major part of how they get there. It's really having full on nutrient balance in their body. So
Awesome. We'll share all of that in the show notes. But Tim, thank you so much for this conversation. Really enjoyed exploring your story and some of the key messages that you've been able to not only embody for yourself, but you're sharing with others. And I hope the listeners are able to take on some of that. We talked about choices, perspective, and humility. And I think it's important to remind ourselves of all of those things.
Absolutely. Like we said during your show, our lives are short. In order to really squeeze out some of the things you really want in your life, choices comes down to choices. They're either good or bad, man. And obviously we want the good ones, right?
Yeah.
Very, very enjoyable being on. Great questions from you, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you for checking out this episode with Tim. As always, please subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. That's the best and easiest way to support this podcast. And on Apple and Spotify, you can leave up to a 5-star review. Please check out the sponsors in the description, as well as the Easy Reflections newsletter, a zero-cost newsletter that goes out weekly, where we explore different mental health topics and provide practical tips and insights for the reader. The link to the newsletter can be found in the show note captions, where you can subscribe directly. Thank you again, and until next time.